Hello and welcome to Vikings Territory Breakdown podcast with myself, Joe Oberle from VikingsTerritory.com and PurplePTSD.com, and Mark Craig from the Star Tribune and StarTribune.com. Mark, how you doing? How's it going today, wherever you're at?
I'm at home, Joe. It's going well. Getting ready to go out.
You're not going to be there for long, right? You're going out to the TCO?
It's a big day, Joe. It's a big day to get better in the NFL. It's May 17th, and we're going to see the whole team out there. So it's exciting stuff.
Were you out there last week for the rookie stuff at all?
I was.
What did you think? What were your impressions? Anything, any takeaways from watching those young lads?
How do I put this nicely? They don't do a whole lot anymore, Joe. There's not a whole lot of action that you see on the field anymore. It's a lot more, and rightfully so. They shouldn't be, you know, beating the crap out of each other on May 13th or whatever. I went out. One story that I'm working on is these two outside linebackers that went undrafted, Luigi Villain and Zach McLeod. Both of them got over $200,000 guaranteed. McLeod was like number two in the league at $250,000. Luigi was at $227,000. He's the top seven. That intrigues me because, you know, they really look the part of that 3-4 outside linebacker, maybe a little bit smaller, which is why they weren't drafted, a little bit shorter. Mm-hmm. But it tells me that because the Vikings didn't draft any linebackers they got Hicks from free agency. It sort of tells me that they're not exactly thrilled with what the depth that they had, going to this new defensive scheme, this new front. It tells me that they weren't exactly thrilled with all the depth that they have to go out and give that kind of guaranteed money, which is a record for the team. And you're seeing a lot more competition for these guys that don't get drafted. So they went out, targeted those two outside spots. And also be kind of intriguing to watch these guys as they move along. They certainly move well. Like I said, they might be a little on the little short side. You're kind of looking at them as what I was doing, looking at them. I also noticed that they didn't seem to have as many, tackles, offensive linemen. And I think O'Connell explained it like almost like it's having a 7-on-7 camp. He wanted to see more skill in the rookie mini camp. So, kind of interesting to see Brett Hundley there. It's like you're looking out there, that's Brett Hundley, who was drafted in what, 17, 18, whatever it was, played for the was with the Packers.
Yeah.
They didn't sign him. They only signed one of the guys that they had out there trying out. So, and he was a linebacker as well, inside linebacker. So,
yeah, William Quinn. Quenkeu, that guy. Yeah,
can't tell you that he jumped out at me. I don't know. Don't know what number he wore, but you typically they'll sign a couple of those guys. I only signed one this time. Again, I think that they're trying to stockpile their linebacker situation, which is also a key special teams position. I'm, talking to Zach McLeod after the mini camp, and he's pretty excited just to get on the field as a special teams NFL player. And when you come with a $250,000 guarantee, that's more money that's guaranteed to him than it's guaranteed to the seventh round pick, the sixth round pick, typical, even like a late fifth round. That's a little bit higher than a typical late fifth rounder. So sort of levels of playing field. And it tells me that this guy could be, a special teams contributor this year. It's kind of a no-name guy.
Let me ask you about that. I mean, stockpiling linebackers. Do you see the reason for that? Maybe because they did address it a little bit in the draft, but why do they have to, I'm probably a naive question here, but when you're going to a 3-4, a 4-3 would have the three linebackers, Mike middle, weak and the other one, weak side and strong side. Now you go to four linebackers with two edge rushers. But edge rushers are different than linebackers per se. They're kind of a tweener, right? They're defensive linemen with some great speed and some great get off that can rush the outside. I mean, how many linebackers did they need? Strict linebackers, because you know, aren't you going to be just running two specific linebackers in your basic formation or not?
Well, those outside linebackers, they got to do more than rush the passer. I mean, more so than a four. You know, some of the 4-3 schemes have where, you know, some fire zone where the guys will drop back a little bit. Typically, I never like that, where you see a guy drop a defense, like a Jared Allen playing. He would
Right.
drop back sometimes. I didn't like that. You're paid to rush the passer, but there had to be some variety there. Well, 3-4 is a lot more. There's a lot more required of those guys. And those two outside guys, if they stay healthy, if is the big question, are going to be outstanding, I would think. But Za'Darius Smith and Danielle Hunter are guys that combined have only played, they played 7 games last year. Danielle didn't play the year before. So there's injuries. You just have to like have guys there that fit your scheme. And you know, everybody that was there besides them, like Eric Kendricks is going to fit inside no matter what scheme you throw at him. But they went out and got Jordan Hicks to handle that other inside spot. They need backups there. But they also, you know, there's guys that DJ Wonnum, it was drafted for a 4-3. This sort of tells me that maybe he doesn't fit their scheme in a 3-4. So that's what they got to find out in the off season and starting with these mini camps, off season, preseason. But you got to bring in guys that fit your system as well. So it's about competition there. It's not only to be backups, but special teams, and also, you know, hopefully that there's guys that you can count on for when, if or when these outside guys get hurt.
You know, also, and you made the good point about special teams, you know, and maybe that's where William Quinnekey or whatever his name is fits in, because he is a little undersized, but he's really fast and he can cover some ground. So maybe good in coverage and maybe good in special teams. Maybe that's the kind of what they're looking at him for him to pull him out and sign him from the rookie camp.
Yeah, I mean, those typically they're linebackers. Linebackers are your probably your best special teams players. One of the most amazing things about Everson Griffen was early in his career as a defensive end, as a 6'3", whatever he was, 287 or two, whatever he was, 270 something. He was an amazing special teams player, and it was almost like it should have been outlawed that someone like that with that power and that size that could run that fast down the field and just blow up people. Probably the best defensive lineman I've ever seen as a special teams player. So you've got to get guys like that, and it's an important part of the game. Until we get to the point where they just finally get rid of the kickoff, or they finally get rid of anything like that. You know, they won't be able to call it. It won't be a noon kickoff. It'll be a noon. Let's meet at the 20. Things like that, but. It's still an important part of the game.
Yeah, Griffin actually did some time as a gunner. So,
Yeah.
special teams, which is, I when I first saw it, I go, what are they doing? But then he acquitted himself quite well there. Speaking of edge rushers, you know, you're going out to TCO this afternoon, and it's Tuesday when we're taping this, but Danielle Hunter's going to speak. And I saw a picture tweeted out yesterday between of him and Za'Darius Smith, just kind of mugging for the cameras, and they look like a couple guys that, well, they're friends. I know that they have a relationship, you know, prior to when they got drafted to their respective teams. But it you know, if you can put aside the injury fear concern with both of them for a bit, that's exciting as hell to see the two guys that are, you know, going to be in camp together. I'm sorry, friends that are going to be, you know, playing alongside each other, and Za'Darius Smith, who seems to be a kind of a little bit of a live wire and probably pretty psyched up for the first game of the season. We'll talk a little bit more about the schedule later, but he's going to play his old mates for the Packers. So I don't know. It gets me excited. I mean, what do you expect to hear from, you know, they're bringing out Daniil. Is it going to be talking about his injury? Is it going to be talking? What do you expect to hear? And what maybe are you going to ask him?
I don't know that I'll be there when he's talking, because I've got, you know, we have multiple people there, so I don't need three people at his podium. Well, you know, with it being a podium session, it's going to be that's more and more what the NFL is now, especially obviously during the pandemic, that's all it was. But you know, it's going to be a lot of, you know, talking about the injury. He's going to be say that he's injuries behind him. Going to be a lot of talk about, you know, Zimmer and the fear-based, as Eric Kendricks put it, system versus O'Connell and this, the new system. I guarantee at some point he'll say collaborative, or he'll be, you know, some sort of the catchphrase word that they're using out there now with the collaboration between the players and the coaches and the kumbaya stuff. So he's going to be in favor of that. He won't say anything derogatory about Zimmer. I'd be interested just to see if you got him to the side and wasn't a podium setting where everything is said is going to be picked apart, you know, 5 minutes later all around the country. But that's where it becomes a little more canned. These guys are they're so polished in how things work now, and the answer has been perfected by most of the guys that go to a podium. I expect that he'll be asked about how he fits in a 3-4. Daniil's not going to be a guy that you're going to be able to have him put on the slot receiver and have him cover, you know, but
right.
I think he's got the length, he's got the athleticism to do a lot of the things that they're going to ask him to do. A part of it's, as I think O'Connell describes, just it's getting in the way. It's in a zone situation, just being that guy that, you know, clogs things up, or if that's what he's doing on that particular play. But ultimately, where he is as great as his rushing the passer. So it'd be interesting just to kind of watch. You know, they don't do a whole lot in practice. But when they come together on 7-on-7, it's going to be interesting just to kind of see. Okay, here's the three defensive linemen that they got in front of them. You know, here's how it looks, and because we haven't seen that type of defense in so long.
Well, you know, they're going to have not only a red jersey on the quarterbacks, but with blinking red lights to keep these guys from tackling. You're kind of a defensive guy. I mean, you played defense when you were playing football, right, back in high school. Is it exciting for you to cover this new scheme and these, you know, guys that potentially are going to be this active back there in rushing the quarterbacks? Does that seem like fun? I mean, are you as excited as I am, Mark?
not in May, no. It's interesting to me because it's hard to picture, a Daniil. I guess it's not real hard, but it's different picturing Daniil in that role. You know, whereas for years, when Leslie was here. And Mike Tomlin, everyone lined up pretty much same spot. When they were, it didn't matter when they were good and they were young and they had the talent, it worked. I mean, they number one in run defense 3 years in a row or whatever it was, which then unleashed the Jared Allens. And so a lot of it's, we overdo it with the schemes and everything. It's still the talent, I think, that makes, you know, just because you're in a 3-4 doesn't mean it's going to confuse the quarterback. It's going to do this, that, and the other thing. If you're in a 3-4 and Daniil's healthy and Za'Darius is healthy and Harrison Smith is that gadget weapon and Seen is worthy of the first round. And the big question is that defensive line going to be good enough? Yeah. Now that's a big question mark. Who's that third defensive lineman? It's the starter's got to be Armin Watts. I saw someone said something about there was a depth chart out there that had Twyman listed as the third as a starter. So Jalen Twyman, the guy they drafted last year that got shot, who didn't play, he was at the rookie minicamp. So was listed by someone as in the depth chart. But he's not going to be a starter. You know, is he going to make the team? I don't even know if he'll make the team. But you know, that third guy, Armin Watts, is a good player, but is he a starting caliber player? Then who's behind these guys? So that's to me, it was a big, big question mark is that defensive line.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing to see. You know, I mean, we got to be. I mean, Daniil came in as a young player. He was raw, but I think he was really young when he came in. So he's got to be about coming to his peak physically. So it'd be, you know, I don't know. Is he 27, 28 maybe, or is
27, I think. You know, yeah, he was young. He was young coming in, raw. I mean, obviously, then he just took off. You know, he was the caliber defensive player of the year, which was his, should have been his goal. I mean, Patterson would always say, "Don't put a ceiling on this guy." And then you got to see why he would say that, because why put a ceiling on a guy who could, you know, like putting a ceiling on John Randall when he was an undrafted free agent. Hey, he could be a Pro Bowl player. Well, no, he could be a Hall of Famer. Now, you know, Daniil, you know, when you get two seasons wiped out in your prime, when you're as good, and he was one of the most durable guys in the league, and then you have two seasons basically erased. It's you know, sad to see, because you like to see guys like him who, you know, he's a good guy.
Yeah,
he's a phenomenal talent, and he's not blowing it. He is taking full advantage of it, and just had two injuries that he couldn't help.
Yeah, it would be wonderful just to see both of those guys come back and have, you know, be dueling for comeback player of the year and just go lights out. I mean, after the past 2 years we've seen on defense, it'd be something else. I mean, you mentioned something earlier about the collaboration thing. I mean, the way you talk about that going from Zimmer to Kevin O'Connell, I think on the first game, they shouldn't bring out that big fire breathing dragon when they do the game ops. They should have a bunch of unicorns run across the field with a rainbow shooting across. You know, if game ops wants some ideas, they just come to me and I'll let them have that. But that is that what we're in for, Mark? That kind of collaboration and kumbaya, is that what we're going to get?
Or maybe they should come in skipping all and holding hands. I don't mean to make fun of it, but I guess I've just seen this, you know, as soon as one guy's out the door, it's complete 180. And it's like, you know, we got all the answers. You know, we're going to do everything different. We're going to do, you know, it's just, you see it all the time. And ultimately there's a head coach. He is going to have to be a head coach at some point. He says all the right things. He tells all of us in the media that, you know, that's a good question. That's a really good question. He's doing a good job of making people smile and make people happy, but ultimately it's wins and losses.
Yep.
And when Zimmer was winning, it didn't matter. It didn't matter. Where Zimmer kind of irked the players was when he knew it was over, or when the vice grip was tightening, Zimmer did not handle it with grace. And Zimmer was a bear for these guys to deal with at the end. I would say when Zimmer was going to the playoffs, he did it every other year until the end when he missed it 2 years in a row.
Yep.
But whenever they were healthy and, you know, Eric Kendricks and those guys were on board with Zimmer's style, because it used to be when Zimmer came in, it was, you know, we need tough leadership. We need someone that'll tell you, you know, point blank hit you between the eyes with the truth and all this. And now it's the softer, gentler, you know, we need someone that will, you know, collaborate. And there's, you know, that is where things are going. And I think you saw Wes Phillips and even Ed Donatell, 65 years old, talking about how the league has changed and the players have changed. But, you know, ultimately there is a boss, and he has to be a boss at some point. So we'll see. We'll see. We'll see. It's going to be a fascinating year just because of how they've changed so much,
right?
And how frankly, this is it. You know, all the, you know, the Kirk Cousins back and forth and back and forth. Is he this? Is he that? And ultimately, it's a stalemate that it's deadlocked at 500 quarterback. And now he's got what everyone that really likes Kirk wants him to have is an offensive coach. An offensive system is going to be, he's going to be comfortable, and let's see what we got.
Yeah, it should be interesting from the get-go, and it starts this afternoon, like you were talking about, with all the whole team there. So it should be fun to see. I hope they let the media have a good look at him for a while and get some quotes and give us something to talk about next week. Well, we'll take a quick break right now and come back with a couple other Vikings headlines for the past week. All right, welcome back to Vikings Territory Breakdown with myself, Mark Craig. Mark, action kind of slowing down the past week, but a couple news items leaked out of rumors and such pertaining to the Vikings. I got a couple I just wanted to run by you. You know, you touched on one. Brent Hudley was at camp, former Packer draft choice that just came in. He wasn't signed, so he's probably not going to be around. But, you know, just it's that the Vikings' propensity for bringing in former Packers. And another one who spent a year in Green Bay, center J.C. Tretter, I think at least 1 year. I think he was drafted there. He put out a note that his short list of teams that interest him, he's a free agent right now, and one of them was the Vikings. And I think he was in Cleveland for a while too. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I believe four years with the Packers, like 4 years with the Packers, and I think 4 years with the Browns. So
would that be a good fit for the Vikings? I mean, you got Bradbury, and they said they didn't announce they weren't going to pick up his fifth year option. And so there's a little bit of question going on there. And J.C. Tretter is a pretty good sized center, isn't he?
He's a good player. I'm sort of a little bit surprised that he hasn't signed. What's going on there? He is the NFLPA president, so I don't know if that has something to do with it. Maybe he's just kind of – I don't know why he's not signed. I do know that, you know, even though he hasn't missed a game in 5 years, with the Browns last year, I don't think he practiced at all. He just showed up on game day to – you know, get through he's 31 years old. He has some knee and ankle leg issues. He's not going to be cheap, you know? So that's another thing. It's like, you bring him in, he's going to cost you $6-7 million a year. I don't think they have that on the cap. I think they're five under or something like that, but you know, I'm not a cap guy, but they need that to, you know, as a reserve and also to like, sign all their rookies and all that stuff. So is he worth it at 31 years old and with, I don't know what what his health is like right now. But yeah, he's better than Bradbury for sure. I assume he's going to play somewhere this year, but having not signed, it's kind of strange what's going on. I mean, he could be trying to get more and more money out of people. I don't know, but you know, it's one of those where, okay, on the surface, you know, yes, the name is better, yeah, but he's a better player, but just where is he in his career? Just because he started every game for the last 5 years doesn't mean that's going to happen this year. Right. So you got to really got to take the injury into consideration. You got to take the money into consideration. The fact, if you get rid of Bradbury and then all of a sudden this guy plays 1 week and his legs give out, then what do you do? I mean, Bradbury's not great, but Bradbury's better than whoever right now is behind Bradbury. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a strange thing. I'm surprised too. Given what you said, why would he have interest in the Vikings? I'm sure his agent knows of their cap situation, you know, and they'd probably have to redo somebody to fit somebody like that in there. But it does bring some questions. And there's other places. Am I wrong, or is Anthony Barr still unsigned? Is he signed?
Has not signed, no. So, yeah, and agents are good. I mean, their job is to drum up the market, right? Mm-hmm. You ever talk to an agent and say, hey, who was interested in your guy? You never get the XYZ was interested. You get off. It's, you know, the whole league was interested. You know, I mean, you don't get specifics. That's their job. You know, they're creating a market and you know, who knows? I mean, I'm sure that he's got other teams out there that he's interested in. I just don't know if his health there, and is he worth the money? That's the two big things. Is he worth the money?
Are you talking Treader?
Yeah, Treader. Yeah, okay. But if what same could be said for Barr, you know, like Barr coming back here, I never, and as we said over and over, I said over and over again on the, when you'd ask about him on the podcast, it'd be like my mind had already moved on from him, like yeah, as soon as the season was over, because A, they really shouldn't have re-signed him the last time. He wasn't worth the money. Zimmer had such an attachment to him, and he knew Zimmer's defense, and Zimmer had such a trust in him to, you know, to be the on-field traffic cop and all this stuff, and be the guy that does things that PFF doesn't like or doesn't appreciate, or the stat book doesn't appreciate. But I also saw that, okay, he moved on from Zimmer. And even though at one point it was like, you know, Barr was kind of the 3-4 outside linebacker. Well, you know, Barr is 30 years old now. Barr has a arthritic knee that knocked him out of a lot of early time last year. You know, he's just, and it never struck me as a kind of guy that's going to grind and grind and grind and play into his mid 30s, get everything he can out of it. Just, you know, he Anthony Barr might be done for all we know. I don't know. It's if he hasn't signed yet, it means he's probably turned down some 1-year prove it deals, you know, yeah, for guys. He's not going to be the Patrick Peterson, it appears, where he says, okay, I'll play for 1 year somewhere and then see what happens. I don't, you know, Barr could be done.
He could be, you know, if you really go back and look critically at his last few years, they have been injury riddled. They have, I mean, he's had flashes, he's had his moments, and like I said, he does those things that that don't show up on the stat sheet per se, but nothing stands out other than the fact that he was in and out of the lineup, and you know, maybe a prove it year for somebody like that is not a good thing. He'd probably wanted a little more security. He must be turning. I wonder if he's getting offers. It just, you know, he wouldn't, I just don't think that his career should be over yet, but maybe it is. You know, if your body's breaking down at age 30 and speed was one of your things, I don't know. It's too bad. I thought he's a decent guy. Not so much, you know, as a guy to talk to, he was always a good guy. And I wish him the best, but you know, it's like, I don't think he's the kind of guy that would come in late when the Vikings need somebody to fill in if they yet need another linebacker.
No, you know, I don't see that. Just because, you know, they've done it. And again, it gets to be where what does it cost to get you what you're going to get? And you know, the shame of it was, you know, we talked about, you know, splash plays, flash plays, whatever. I can't remember which games they were, but there was a couple games at the end where Anthony Barr stood up and made some great plays.
Yep.
And then they didn't. The offense let him down. And there's one play in particular where he had a tip and he came up off the ground and made the interception. It's like, oh, that's the play everyone's been begging for the past 5-6 years.
Right.
And then it turns out that the offense couldn't take advantage of it. They went 3 and out or whatever. So. It's one of those where, you know, the defense did hand, you know, like I'm sure Zimmer, if we dialed Zimmer up right now, he'd know exactly what play it was, because it was his defense, his guy, handing Kirk the ball, and I believe they went 3 and out. So
I think you're right.
Zim, if you're listening, text me with what play that was, what game. I guarantee he knows it.
I remember it. It was a great play, and it was typical of last year. That happened a lot when the defense would come up with a big play and put the offense in position. They would go 3 and out, and they couldn't finish the deal. Now, I mean, you know, that stuff never shows up on a stat sheet per se for Kirk Cousins. But, you know, I mean, he's the 10th in the league in this, and he's this and this and this. And everybody's singing it. There are a lot of people are singing his praises on the stat sheet. But boy, when the Vikings really need the offense to put their foot on the throat and for the defense to get them, you know, put them back, the defense, which was hanging on by their fingernails, you know, it too often didn't happen. So I certainly remember.
It didn't happen. I mean, the offense did. There were times where the offense did do what we're talking about. It did not happen enough. It didn't happen consistently enough for, again, for the amount of money that you're paying your quarterback, it should have happened a lot more and been more consistent, and it wasn't.
Well, it should happen this year, right? Just, you know, they got it all set up. They got the defense rebuilt. It's all going to happen, Mark. It's no big deal. A couple other things. Kevin O'Connell took his rookies last week to a Twins game where he threw out the first pitch. And, you know, I sarcastically said, Shaq can sure see Zim doing that, can't you? You know, taking his rookies over to a Twins game. It's funny. I don't know if Zimmer ever threw out a first pitch at the game.
Was it a strike? Was it like George W. when after 9/11, fire it right down the middle?
No, it was. I don't think it was a strike, but it wasn't terrible. You know,
I have Hulu, so I can't watch the local sports teams because Hulu and the local sports teams can't figure this crap out.
Yeah, we should spend a segment on that sometime. I actually just got rid of DirecTV, which has Bally Sports on it, because the Wild and the Wolves both got knocked out of the playoffs, and I'm not going to watch enough Twins games to warrant 90-some bucks a month. So I'll get back on next season when the Wild and Wolves start kicking back in. But
no, as far as did Zim do that – I'm a firm believer in you got to do, you know, you can't recreate yourself. You can't, as people see through. I mean, a lot of times people will say that that's sort of what rubs people wrong about Kirk is Kirk. And I'm just, you know, guessing on some of this stuff. But whenever, like for the camera, whenever he was doing the, remember there's a stretch a couple years ago where he was always on camera firing a team up before the game. Well, they won a game and then he was doing it more and more. It just didn't look genuine, I don't think. And I think there's some of that in locker rooms where if you're trying to be someone you're not, guys see through you right away. So if Zimmer would have said, okay, people say that I need to, like, you know, be more chummy with the guys and bring them to the baseball game and throw out the, you know, that wouldn't work. So I think Zimmer was who he was. And Zimmer would, you know, and Trey Wayne said this on a podcast down in Cincinnati that, whenever he was shopping in free agency and Zach, trying to blank, the head coach called him and said, you know, hey, it was right after, I believe, what was going on in Minneapolis. He called and said, hey, how's your family? You know, are you doing all right? And just kind of like nothing to do with football. And Trey Wayne's it was like, hey, you know, that Zimmer never would have done that. Now, he did also go on to say something more about, it was more like a business with Zimmer. Not that they hated Zimmer, but he felt it was, you know, it was odd for him to have a, you know, a coach maybe closer to his age that was more talking about his family. You know? So I do think Zimmer, you know, I don't think Zimmer, I think he cared about his players. He was just indifferent.
I think he loved
them more. Just a more business approach. You know, it's just the way it was. Plus, he's different in age. It's more like, hey, do your job. I'll do my job. We'll win. We'll shake hands, and then you go to your house. I'll go to my house. We don't need to go to Twins games together.
As far as those Kirk Cousins pregame fire-ups, if he had just changed it up from it seemed like every week all he would say was, you like that? You like that? Yeah. He didn't do that.
But yeah, like I always, you know, he tried too hard. He tries too hard, it seems. When Kirk came in, and we had dinner with, you know, different people in the media. So we went out to dinner in St. Paul with him, just the Star Tribune guys and Kirk. And I remember, you know, he was just, he struck me as a, he had to be a pleaser. He has to please everybody from the head coach to the, you want to please your owner, obviously. But he wanted to please, like, even the PR people that handled him. And I at one point I joked, I said, you got the first guaranteed multi-year contract in the history of the NFL. You could just tell everyone not to, you know, piss off, you know. You have the control to be who you want to be and let everyone out, let the chips fall where they may, you know, whatever other cliches you want to throw out there. And he kind of laughed. He was just like, yeah, you know. But there's some truth to that, but that he was just always so kind of like when they went through the thing with with Thielen and Diggs, and it was, you know, and they went on a podcast or something where he was talking to Thielen, and he apologized to Thielen about how he didn't get him the ball, and a lot of that's just too much. It's too much of it's just your quarterback should be a little bit more like
Brett
I don't know, yeah, like you know, just hey, you know. Not apologize, not try to please everyone. So there's some of that with Kirk that might rub some people wrong way.
Yeah, I think Kirk in the right setting, and I don't think it's a football setting, could be a decent leader in a certain setting. I think he has enough confidence and abilities and smarts and what have you. I think there to be a leader of a football team, there it just requires something more. I mean, you know, everybody was ready to go into battle for him until he probably rubbed people the wrong way. And, you know, Drew Brees kind of reminds me more of Kirk Cousins, but he still was able to pull off that too. So I don't know, maybe I'm speaking out of school here, but yeah, I don't know if Kirk, you know, even wants to be that guy. I think he would like to win games and be happy and then go home and spend his time with his family. But I don't know if he lives, sleeps and poops football, you know, like, you know, some people you kind of want their quarterback to do. I don't know.
I think, yeah, I think you're underselling Drew Brees is grittiness, toughness, leadership. I don't know if we're going to kind of always comes down to Kirk, but you know, to me, he's a outstanding quarterback. He has the arm ability to make any throw. The mobility is not what you'd like it to be, but you know, if you put the line in front of him, he can do it. He can make the plays. There's something about he just disappears in big moments too much.
Yeah.
He also has appeared in big moments.
Yep.
And we saw that last year, but you know, consistently it's just doesn't match what he's getting from your salary cap. And that's just, I'm sorry. That's how I feel. That's how a lot of people probably go farther and say it's terrible. If you haven't won the Super Bowl and you haven't done this, this, and this, you're a terrible quarterback. But no, he's not a terrible quarterback. He's not a terrible leader.
He's going to make some phenomenal passes.
He's just not. He's not what has been paid to be.
Yeah.
But you know, here we are. We got this year. That this could be his year to prove it wrong.
Mark, I really think this is a huge year for him. I mean, but that's goes without saying. But you know, he seems to have everything in place for him. They helped his offensive line a little bit. They got him a coach that he seems to like. He's talked about being giddy about playing football and such, and he doesn't feel like he's having someone looking over his shoulder. He's got a quarterback, which blah 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 blah. I think the pressure really comes down on him, even though it's, you know, he's got 2 years left on his contract. I think this year you can really pinpoint losses on him if they don't succeed, because I think the defense is going to be better, and I think the offense is going to be more solid around him. I mean, he's got incredible weapons. If Irv Smith stays healthy and everybody stays healthy, as you know, I think it does fall a lot on his shoulders. So it should really be an interesting season for that.
Yeah, and we've that's been said numerous times now, but. Now you have.
I came up with that. What do you
think? Yeah, that's a, yeah. It's Jay Gruden's never thought that. Mike Zimmer never thought. The thing is, you know, now what you have is, it's still ultimately, it probably comes down to that offense. You know, is Bradbury? Are they going to get more out of Bradbury like they supposedly said they're going to? Did they? One of the 900 candidates at right guard, is that going to come through? You know, is your left tackle going to stay healthy? I think if he gets an offensive line, you know, then that goes a long way toward whether Kirk Cousins will do what, you know, Kirk Cousins is supposed to do. And right. now you have this collaboration with the head. He's not going to be at war with the head coach or have a frosty relationship with the head coach.
Should he's be going to.
So that to me for Kirk Cousins is probably a big deal.
Yeah. Well, there I did it, Mark. You said it. You know, when we talk about putting together agendas for this, you always say when we're scraping for stuff to talk about. Quarterback, Joe. You can always talk about the quarterback. So there we go.
Well, that's my former sports editor, Glenn Crevier. Every meeting that we would have, he'd kind of sit there quietly. He's a baseball guy from Boston, so he was always upset that the baseball wasn't the number one sport in the world. And he would just sit there and he'd be like, he had that Boston accent. And it would be, quarterbacks. And it's like, so when in doubt, go with the quarterbacks.
There you go. Well, he was probably too young because baseball used to be the number one sport. It's not anymore. But anyway, we'll take a quick break and we'll come back and look at how the Vikings schedule did shape up, the big news of last week. And we'll talk about that. Come on back. All right, welcome back to Vikings Territory Breakdown with Mark Craig and myself. And I can't get it in here, but there's Mankato Brewery. There it is. So
there you go.
Have to mention that today. They're not sponsoring the schedule release, unfortunately. That would be nice if they were. But the schedule did come out, and even though some things leaked out, you know, they had the London game in week four and the Monday Night Football game in week two. But a few more surprises came out. And specifically, one that I had predicted on the show last week was that the Vikings were going to host the Packers in week one and get them before Christian Watson is ready to play. Him and Aaron Rodgers haven't figured it out yet. And all these new bodies in Green Bay might not be ready for action. And they lost their opener last year down in Jacksonville. It's one of the few games Jacksonville won. So I think that's a great opening get for the Vikings. What do you think, Mark?
Well, no, last year they played in Jacksonville, but it was against the Saints.
Oh, that's good.
So that was a neutral.
It was in Jacksonville.
It's a neutral site, which even if they played the Jaguars, it probably would have been a Packers crowd anyways. The Packers also playing in London for the first time ever. So that will definitely be another home game for them, home feel to it. I also like that it's week one. Two things I like about week one, that they're playing the Packers. And as you said, it'll kind of catch them. I mean, obviously the Vikings will be, trying to get their guys in a new system and everything. But I like the fact that I'd rather, have Aaron Rodgers and his guys kind of feeling their way through it as opposed to hitting them in week seven. And I also like the fact that I'm assuming the pandemic will hold off or not return in time to make it an empty stadium like it was 2 years ago. That's another one. If Zimmer's going to be sitting somewhere going, if they beat the Packers, there'll be a loud scream from Kentucky that, I could have used that crowd too, because
it was a joke.
It was just, it was the first time that was the first game of the pandemic. And it was just, one thing that irritated me the whole time was the fake noise. It was kind of like the fake noise going through it. And which it really came across more on TV when you were watching it,
by design.
That bothered me. It's like we know there's no one there. Just play the game. But it was, it was surreal. It was weird. Great. It was fantastic driving to the game. If there could be a pandemic right up to kickoff, let us get in the stadium and then let the people in. No traffic. That was awesome. But it was just weird, and you could just see it on, like when the camera would show Rodgers' face and. That's when he got him to jump off sides. He was doing his famous or infamous, depending on where you live, hard count that got Everson Griffin a couple of times. It got another defensive lineman on third down, extended drives. And he was just toying with knowing that, you could just see it on his face, knowing that, hey, if this was a normal situation, I'm in Minnesota and I'm getting linemen to jump off sides. It's kind of weird. So, I like – it'll be a great crowd. And I think it's a little, it's further, it's the 3:30 game, I believe.
Yeah.
Which, you know, you give those Minnesotans three more, like Zimmer would say, you know, 3 more hours to drink. Yeah, let's go. And everyone, make sure you get an Uber home. We don't want to encourage anything, Joe, on this show. That's an advantage. But a disadvantage is, you know, they're one of only two teams, I think, in the league that finishes on the road against division opponents the last two weeks of the season.
Right. Yeah.
And that just happens to be, I think Carolina is the other one. Officially the Vikings have the worst final 2 weeks, assuming they're still in it and fighting for the playoffs. They got to go to Green Bay on New Year's Day.
New Year's Day, yep.
And then they go to Chicago, which I think they owe the Bears like 15 straight season-ending games, because it seems like they were all, you know, the Bears were always here at the end.
Always here, yeah.
So yeah, that's a tough way to end it. Now they also play their first three. They play all three division opponents at home in the first 5 weeks of the season, which is kind of strange.
Yeah,
maybe gives a good jump on the division. They also play, you know, some quarterbacks that they should be able to kind of, I guess, quarterbacks that are still like in their first, second year or they're not really proven. You know, it's like, you know, playing Justin Fields twice now. They get, you know, although I think they're going to lose to the, I'll take the Patriots right up till kickoff on Thanksgiving night. But they have Mac Jones, you know, they got the, I also don't like them winning in Philadelphia week two, but that's Jalen Hurts. So there's some quarterbacks they could take advantage of if they had their pass rush going.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You said it could be an advantage for the division, but it also could be a detriment if they aren't up to speed with their new systems on offense and defense, and they could kick away a couple divisional games that they could have won at home and already been in a hole. So who knows what's going to happen there. Yeah, you mentioned that they do play the Packers on New Year's Day at Lambeau. They play Thursday night game at home against the Patriots, which I think is a big deal, which actually makes that one look more pleasing for the Vikings. But who knows? I don't know what the records are of teams playing that Thursday night game at home, who wins, but it doesn't matter. They also are playing on Christmas Eve at home against the Giants. So that's kind of favorable for those old holiday games for Minnesota, because they're at the only one that they're away at is the one in Lambeau on New Year's Day. You know, the bye, interestingly enough, doesn't come until week 7, and it doesn't come right after the London game, which is week 4. And typically they had been the NFL was giving teams a bye after they're having to travel to London. As a beat guy who's got to go there yourself, is that good news, bad news for you? You got to get right back here and cover another game.
Yeah, I mean, it's typical. The Vikings didn't want that. They didn't want the bye being that early. Right. So they wanted it. I forget where it is, week 7 or 8 or somewhere in there. So, yeah, it's – I think coming back home and then have them play at home is nice. You know, from a guy who has to, you know, assuming I'll go to all the games, it's kind of nice being home on Christmas Eve. It's nice. Now, one thing I have a problem with the NFL, and they should have checked with me on this. We have a tradition in my family of watching Christmas Vacation on Thanksgiving night.
Uh-oh.
So I'm a little, even when the NFL brought in that, like you need a third game on Thanksgiving. Come on. So they bring it in. They that was always kind of the best game too, you know, because tired of watching Detroit every single year. They should just get rid of that and rotate that one. There's certain traditions that don't need to be traditions, and Detroit on Thanksgiving just needs to go away. But even
when Cowboys, they can go away too. As far as
so even whenever they brought in, you know, that night game, we stuck to our tradition of watching that Christmas Vacation, and then. Christmas Eve is nice being at home.
Yep.
You don't have to travel and then not having to travel the week out, weekend after Thanksgiving is nice because that's like a little mini bye week. And then right. January 1st in Lambeau, I'm at the age now where I don't even pretend to like stay up. I don't even make that effort to stay up until midnight. We got to where we celebrated the Eastern time zone. We make our phone calls, you know, back home and, you know, Happy New Year. Now it's like, it's over, you know, 9, 10 o'clock, go to bed.
Yeah. Mark, you talked about the nice, you know, getting all the division teams at home early in the schedule. There's a stretch that concerns me in November, having in 12 calendar days, Buffalo, Cowboys, and the Patriots consecutively. That's a tough row to hoe there they're going to play the Cowboys on a Sunday, and then 4 days later, they'll play the Patriots on Thanksgiving, preceding with those two games by playing at Buffalo. That's a tough part of the schedule. I'm hoping that they get one game out of those three, I think.
Yeah, it's so strange because they're you know, the schedule always looks a certain way at the beginning of the year before the season starts, and then there'll be three or four teams that you think that they're not any good, and they'll end up being good, and then say the vice versa. Last year was a classic example. You know, before getting into that season, you know, the season opener at Cincinnati, how many people said if they lose to Cincinnati, you know, the season's going to be over because since you got to beat Cincinnati to start right. the season. Well, Cincinnati wins the AFC. The AFC is better than the NFC. Cincinnati wins the AFC. So, and then the next week it was like, Arizona's probably, you know, the third best team in their division. And you got to beat Arizona. Well, you know, they don't beat Arizona, but Arizona was the last team to lose. And I think they were 9-0 or whatever they were. So then it just kind of, you know, what did we think it is going in is that's the beauty of the NFL is that there's two things beautiful about the NFL. One, it's so unpredictable each year. And two, there seems to be no one in the country that can remember that it's unpredictable. So we all make our predictions and we go, I can't believe that happened. You know, it's like, and we do it over and over and over again. It's the NFL has us on a string and they're kind of dancing around, you know, 365 days a year, you know, making predictions and say, I can't believe that happened.
Strength of schedule only goes so long, doesn't it? I mean, strength of schedule, so you can say it all you want at the beginning of the year and then, you know, 3 or 4 weeks into the season, completely flipped on its head.
Yeah, and there's a lot of fascinating things about, like, you know, we assume, let's say Philadelphia, for example, we assume if Philadelphia is Jalen Hurts is who we think he is. And, but, you know, Philadelphia did a lot of things in the offseason that intrigued me, you know, getting the receiver, A.J. Brown, drafting that guy, Jordan Davis, I thought would be great for Minnesota, you know, and they did a lot of other things. So, you know, you have a certain way you view each team, like Cincinnati. You're viewing Cincinnati last year based on how Cincinnati was for however many years, you know. But they were, you know, Joe Burrow got up to speed. Joe Burrow is the real deal, and so now Cincinnati, there's going to be a totally different view of Cincinnati, you know, for the next. Well, they don't play them again until, you know, 3-4 more years. So. You know, everything's just kind of based on last year when it should not be based on last year because of how the league is and how they change and everything changes up.
Peter King came out yesterday or the day before and said that he thinks the Vikings are a sneaky team for that sixth playoff spot in the NFC. So he's throwing it out there. Are you?
They by the way the league is and how, you know, I mean, it's, I don't know how many years it is now. This is a stat that I should be burned into your brain. But you look at it, it's 30 some years where three or four teams that don't make the playoffs make it. Yes. So four teams that don't make the playoffs, you know, make it the next year. Now you got that, you know, the odd thing about the Vikings is in their history of being really competitive and everything, the first 2 years of there being an extra playoff team, they didn't make it. So just Zimmer finished one game out each each year. And the one was, you know, the first time was 17 game season, they miss it. So
how about that? Yeah, I didn't think of that.
So yeah, to me, it's the Vikings. Well, the Vikings were a sneaky team last year until they got, you know, COVID at the wrong times. Yep. You know, Patrick Peterson gets COVID. Harrison Smith is in Baltimore ready to play, and he's, you know, gets COVID and can't play, and they have to fly him home. You know, Cousins misses the kill shot for Zimmer was Cousins. You know. Yeah. Them having to start Sean Mannion in week 17 at Lambeau. So, yeah, the Vikings were a sneaky team until, like, Danielle Hunter went down. So if they stay healthy, yeah, they're a sneaky team for, that fifth, sixth, seventh. I don't see them upsetting. I see the Packers winning the division again. The Packers, are almost like shooting fish in a barrel in the division for so many years. It's like,
see, that's why I don't agree. A lot of people are saying that, and they lost some personnel too, you know.
Yeah.
And they still got Rodgers. I get that, but they lost some, you know, Zadarius Smith and Davante Adams, and they're rebuilding a little bit. So, you know, maybe it's because the division is so weak that they've been able to do that, but and having Rodgers. But I don't know. I think the Vikings will challenge him a little bit for the
division. Well, to me, it's having Rodgers. Because, Davante Adams wasn't Davante Adams until Jordy Nelson left. They aren't going to be go through the season with Aaron Rodgers not being able to find a receiver that he's going to make a great, the guy's going to look great, whoever steps forward. And that's what guys like him do. That's what guys that, hate him, love him, whatever. Whenever they had two all-pro offensive linemen, neither one of them played last year. And left tackle, center went left in free agency. The left tackle was hurt all year, and they still won 13 games because of him. It's because of what he's able to do and how he makes everyone around him better. He's not playing to the level of everyone around him. He's raising the level around him in however many ways he does it. And that's the one thing that, you know, is very rare. It's why you're a four-time MVP.
And that may be something that old Kirky boy doesn't quite have yet. Now the schedule's revealed, and we were previewing it last week. I think you had them at 8-9 or 9-8, one of the two. The Vikings, do you change your prediction?
I had a top of the head in May prediction. Yeah. 8-9, I had them at. What would change it? Probably not, because I didn't have them.
You had them getting swept by the Packers, but now they got that first game.
Yeah, I mean that's a good example of where the game is. You know, I don't know what I'm going to be picking that week, but you know, when US Bank Stadium is because that's going to be a little later game. That was a Monday night game. I would switch it right now. If that was a primetime game, I probably would switch it right now. Because I think that makes a big enough, just the atmosphere for US Bank Stadium.
Yeah.
But that could be something that changes you. So then now you're at 9-8, later on, I wouldn't change the Philadelphia pick, probably gets enhanced. Well, we knew this last time we talked that they were going to have that primetime game. So that kind of enforces that I picked Philadelphia. The London, I think I had them beating the Saints.
Yeah.
I see that. I don't see it being a Saints crowd. And you're getting a break by not having to play in the Superdome. But who knows what the Saints are going to be like? You just don't know.
Yeah. I'm concerned. I had them beating the Patriots, but now coming – 4 days after playing the Cowboys, granted they're both at home, which is nice, but that's a little difficult. That whole
story. But the Patriots have to play too 4 days after, so they have to play on the road on Thanksgiving. So
So regardless, no matter what you say the rest of the year, I'm holding you to 8-9, buddy boy, and I'm going to 10. And
that might actually, not that I would change my Patriots pick, but. You know, that to me is works in the Vikings' favor, being at home, 4 days after.
It does. It absolutely does. but they have a better, more, they kind of have a more, a coach with a better track record than the Vikings
do. Well, yeah, that's why I said, you know, Belichick's not going to lose to, you know, a guy that's,
yeah.
believe it or not, I mean, he may end up being good for Kirk. He may end up being good for the organization. He may end up being the guy that takes this team back to the Super Bowl and wins the Super Bowl, but he's going to have a learning curve. I mean, let's be realistic. I think he's going to come out, and I know he's got a coach for every minute of every game for the entire year. But to me, it's like, you know, there's going to be parts in the game where it's going to be new to him. You know, he's going to be calling plays for the first time. I think he called plays in 2000, the year that Gruden got fired. He might have a couple games at the end of the year, but all this is going to be new. And no matter how much they think they're ready for every scenario, the NFL throws you a new curveball almost every game where you're like, wow, you know, that's why the rules change every single year. Cause they're like, wow, that, you know, we've been playing football for 101 years, but we never saw that, you know? So he's going to have a lot of that. So I'm willing to give him, you know, we got to give him a little leeway to like if he comes out and he blows the time management against the Packers and, you know, he makes a boneheaded fourth down call or something, or you're like, you know,
they'll run him out of town on the end of his uniform.
Yeah, I'm suggesting that, like, say he makes a mistake in the Packers game and they lose to the Packers. And I suggest that we don't say we should fire him that night. I'm just saying, calm down just a little bit.
Talking about flipping of scripts, I got to ask you this. This is a perfect segue because, you know, before the season, we would have never imagined this. But for the PGA Championship this week, Tiger and Phil. Tiger's going to play. Phil's not. And for various reasons. Now, before the season, we would have thought just the opposite, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. The thing with Phil, and again, I'm not a PGA expert, but the crime doesn't seem to match the fact that we didn't see him at Augusta, that we're not seeing him defending it. A 50-year-old wins a major. We're seeing him not defend his title. There's got to be more going on here. What I mean, I know that he said the PGA is a bunch of greedy bastards or whatever he said, and I know that the Saudis and they got the human rights stuff, but I know that's, you know, he shouldn't have been in favor of that or not in favor, but he said something like this for him to speak out against the PGA was worth it or something. I don't know. It just doesn't seem to me to match what he said. The fact that this guy has been in exile for as long as he has, I mean, come back. He should come back and play.
He's, you know, what, 51 years old and going to be defending his title after not having played how long this season? I think he's bowing out because he doesn't want to be embarrassed. But
well, yeah, but I'm saying, you know, he should have been. I mean, I never would have thought in a million years he'd miss Augusta.
Masters,
you know, yeah. play a tournament, get ready for it, and play maybe a couple more tournaments to get ready. The fact that he's just shut it down, we may not see him this whole year now.
Yeah, there's something else going on. You're right, yeah. But I don't want to speculate on it because I don't have any facts.
Well, people said that he's been suspended. Well, if you suspend someone, wouldn't you announce it? Wouldn't you? Right. A secret suspension, what does that do? You know, I don't know.
Anyway, on that note, we've lost all our NFL viewers. So
you lost me, so.
Well, thanks, Mark. Thanks for to Mike Walden behind the scenes for putting this on. Thanks, Joe Johnson, for starting it many, many years ago. And we'll be back next week to find out what Mark's going to find out this afternoon and all week out at TCL Performance Center. He'll have the inside scoop. So join us next week on the Vikings Territory Breakdown. And until then, skull.